You're listening to a Countout Podcast. Countout provides a wide variety of bonus content that is right at your fingertips. On the Countout Patreon, our podcasts are creating bonus content exclusively for you, their listener. For only $5 a month, you can watch instant reactions to major shows, watch-alongs, early access to main feed podcasts, some fun goof and gag audio, plus shows from some of the podcasters' outside interests. It's the best way to experience all that the Countout Network has to offer. So head on down to patreon.com/countout to take part in some of the best and most fun content wrestling has to offer. Again, that is patreon.com/countout.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Ballot. We are excited here. It's season two of The Ballot. Of course, talking about all the new first-timers going on to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame next year. I'm your host, Ryan Eitze. And today I have, I think, a very, very interesting name to discuss. We are discussing Ted Boy Marino. He is a massive star out of Brazil, but I think a name that definitely everyone listening to this, someone that I 100% had no idea who this was before his name even popped up on the ballot. I think most people have no idea who this was. And luckily, a article came out last year that, you know, maybe it played a hand. Maybe it helped a little bit in him getting onto the ballot. But an article came out last year going all in detail about his career and his, you know, the breadth of his popularity. Of Ted Boy's popularity, and it was very important for me to track down that writer, and here he is today, Verb Abrams, joining us on the ballot. Verb, thank you so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Like I said from the top here, I was very excited to have not only you on the show, but talking about Ted Boy. Like I said, a name that I simply knew nothing about until I just saw his name, saw an Italian Brazilian wrestler, and I said, okay, this is a wild entry for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, the nominations for next year. And I'm fascinated by this person. I'm fascinated by Ted Boy. What is your sort of connection to Ted Boy? How did you discover Ted Boy Marino?
Well, I like wrestling. And
sorry. I know,
bombshell, I like wrestling. And my partner was born in Brazil. And I was talking with her mom. And I just brought up the idea of professional wrestling in Brazil. Did they have professional wrestling? Was it anything that was around when she was a kid? And she immediately, like, oh, yeah, Ted Boy Marino. As we're talking about Ted Boy, we're speaking about him with an English accent or an American accent, I guess.
Yes.
The Portuguese or the Brazilians would call him Teji Boy. T-E-D would be Teji. Mm-hmm. So yeah, oh yeah, Teji Boy Marino. And here's a guy I'd never heard anything about. She started talking about it. And then I got on my research horse and here we are.
What? So you did a bunch of research on Ted Boy, on Teddy Boy. I'll see if I can.
No, we'll say Ted Boy. The only reason that Teddy Boy matters, the importance that it has of saying Teddy Boy that way is to explain where the name even comes from, what this whole gimmick is, what the whole deal is. It's a takeoff of these guys who were in post-World War II England, who would go to thrift stores, and the clothes they were buying were of an Edwardian fashion. From what, and what that meant is that in the papers, they got labeled the Eddie Boys or the Teddy Boys. Mm-hmm. So if you were a speaker of Portuguese, you were hearing Teddy Boy would hear T-E-D. Mm-hmm. And so that's all you'd have for Ted Boy. So that's how he ends. Now, he has nothing to do with Edwardian fashion or these guys or anything. This was something where he was a Cartigian find, and Martine just gave guys gimmicks. It didn't matter what they were like. It was, hey, here's a thing that I heard about. You're now Teddy Boy.
What I'm trying to think, I should have done the one thing of research I didn't do. What does like the what does the classic Edwardian boy look like? I have to imagine that probably played into it. You know, we'll talk about more about like
what. Honestly, no. I wish I could say yes that he like had like ruffled collars and like long jackets and stuff like that. No, he looks mod. If anything, he has sort of a mod haircut. But that's kind of the time too, in the late 60s, in Brazil, that was kind of a look. So it's not like it's unique to him, but it certainly has nothing to do with, these post-World War II English boys.
There's just a vibe about them that, that Cardigan liked, I guess, and wanted to bring that in. Cause obviously I have to assume saw Marino and said, this is a baby face. This is a young boy that's going to appeal to the young folk, especially the women. Yeah. Something about Edwardian boys makes me feel like this will be attractive to women, I guess. That's the gimmick.
You have to remember, like, Cartigian, when he's building his rosters, everybody, Ted Boy got away pretty easy when it comes to dialing up what the gimmicks could be. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't Frankenstein. Yeah. He wasn't a clown. So being able to just, I assume, unless, and I would love to know otherwise, but I assume it was just something that was mentally sticky in his head that he heard, you know, in an airplane magazine or something to that effect and just stuck in his head. And that's, he needed a name for Ted Boy or needed a name for Mario Marino and he became Ted Boy.
Yeah, and maybe Mario Marino was a little too Italian for the Brazilian audience. I don't know, but that's a very Italian name.
This would have been back in Argentina. So Ted Boy was born in Sicily, and when he was in his early teens, immigrated to Argentina, and that's where Cartigian found him, trying to work himself up in the gym.
Yeah, I believe somewhere. Where was it? He got the name in 1953. He moved to Argentina in 1950. And basically around that time, 1953, 1954, he starts training and wrestle in Argentina.
Yep.
Of course, they had their own telecatch series, their own wrestling series at that point in time in Argentina. So I think the way we're going to kind of structure this episode a little bit is we're going to go through a little bit of the timeline. I think it's a very interesting timeline for Marino, and then we'll talk about within the context of the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame qualifications, I guess you could say, the criteria for entry. We'll talk about all these sort of things and how that, now that he is on the ballot, what, you know, how he can do in these different categories, what's the case for him, and then of course I'll ask you who are you going to vote for in that category? But we'll get to that, I guess, at the end here. So, of course, like you said, he's born in Italy, 1938. He moves to Argentina, 1950, begins training, gets the name Ted Boy Marino all over in Argentina. And then it's roughly in 1965, after he has already become a top star in Argentina, is where he gets picked up, along with a bunch of other guys, picked up to move to Brazil and join the Brazilian Telecatch TV series. What is that sort of process like for Marino?
Well, Tete Alonso was an entertainment impresario who recognized what was going on in Argentina. And a lot of those were simulcast both in Argentina and Uruguay. And so Brazil, just like America, just like it seems like most nations that started with television at some point had wrestling on TV early on. And that was no different in Brazil. That was no different in Argentina, Uruguay, throughout South America. And so Tete went down to Argentina with as like a talent scout, trying to look for talent that he could sign to bring up to Brazil with the intention of putting them on Brazilian TV. And like you said, Ted Boy was already established in Argentina, but at the time that Tete showed up, Ted Boy was injured. He had a broken arm. He wasn't able to perform, and he really had to make the case that he should be selected among the wrestlers that were available to Alonso. And Alonso made the call and ended up eventually taking what was someone who'd become a member of his family eventually to Brazil. And he discovered the biggest wrestling star in Brazil history there. A guy with a broken arm who could difficulty speaking Spanish, let alone Portuguese.
And, you know, in that research as well, planned to only stay there for roughly 3 months or so. They had no intention to stay really for the rest of his life in Brazil. Only had the intention to stay there for a little bit, I guess. I don't know why that's only 3 months. I assume that means his arm was almost healed. That'd be my best guess, but
we've never heard of wrestlers working through injuries before. I bet that's part of it. There's a documentary that should be out relatively soon, hopefully before the voting that's coming up in 2025, but made by Ted Boy's kids, Ted Boy's sons. And in it, I've seen some footage from it. And in it, there's an interview with Ted Boy. And one of the things he says is very simple, but true, that he came to Brazil with a towel and a pair of boots. Wow. I mean, and it's metaphorical, but that's not untrue. It was a very much a gamble, with the expectation that, hey, you'll try it. But he was giving up a decent life. He had established himself into a decent life in Argentina. So it was a major gamble for him. And you can understand why somebody might mentally hedge. Even with that type of a big gamble, you can figure, how much do you want to risk? And that's the thing. I think that's one of the reasons that we all love wrestling to a certain extent, is that it involves a lot of risk takers and being able to watch from the outside without having to have any skin in the game, but watching really interesting people take dramatic risks. It's as entertaining as it gets. And so Ted Boy gave us that before he even stepped foot in a Brazilian ring.
Yes, this was no TV Excelsior ID deals for Ted Boy. This was just popping up on TV Excelsior. And not just like popping up for obviously their Telecatch series, but it seems almost immediately popping up on other TV shows. I'm not even going to attempt this. The Os Alvadores Chapalhos, I don't know. Probably.
It's fine. We'll say it in English. The Adorable Bumblers is probably a close translation.
Yes. I've seen Lovely Bumblers as well. I've seen various things, but Adorable Bumblers is the main translation there. But pretty much immediately, as I found, it's all 1965 is when he starts starring in there, which is obviously the same point in time where he's popping up in Brazil for Telecatch.
Yeah, so Ted Boy is interesting because what you can see around him is people who clearly thought he was a star. Mm-hmm. So what's hard to understand when you have something like that, let's say, let's broaden it out, and let's say Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon. To what extent was it Hulk Hogan, and to what extent was it Vince McMahon? And do you need to figure out, you know, I think that's a, you build the evidence on either side, but I don't think that you can give more, you can give a super majority to one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of the same with Ted Boy, to the extent that he was so white hot that they were just building things around him. Mm-hmm. Or plugging him into places. I mean, I'm going to call it the Bumblers show was kind of, if you think about like the Monkees without, like the Monkees, the show with no music.
Yeah.
So you just get a couple of guys, put them together from a studio, and you had Wanderlei Cardozo, who was a comedian. You had a singer, you had Ted Boy, and eventually that fell apart because, you know, it's the Monkees with no music. They took off later. It sits after Ted Boy left, but they were building things around him. They gave him a variety show that he was co-hosting for a period. They gave him, they had a whole bizarre TV show where he was in space and there were kids who were also in space, and he was sort of in charge of them, and he kind of like was sort of a sensei character, but it was a lot of guest stars who would come on. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it, you know what I mean? Like, what is that? How do you
describe fighting
that?
Aliens or something?
Yeah,
well?
Yeah. That was the drama. This was like a kind of a Star Trek-y idea, but also with kids. And so I don't know how you sell those things without an understanding that the main star is popular. You know, yeah. There are certain movies that are just, they're Tom Cruise movies. Uh-huh. And people go see them because they're Tom Cruise movies. They don't matter. And they kind of expect what it is they're getting. And they get it. And they're happy. And that's kind of in that way of like, all right, well, part of this is people just want Ted Boy. People really find him so magnetic, so appealing, so engaging and interesting to have on their TV that literally broadcast television had him in Brazilian homes, uh-huh, 7 nights a week.
Yeah. And that's by the time he gets to TV Global, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And with Global, which is still the biggest television company in Brazil, for context, it's he was Globo star. He was one of many Globo stars. Uh-huh. But he would be doing commercials for them. They would put him in front of the camera in a tuxedo as the type of character that they wanted to show off. And in contrast, all of the other people on the Telecat show really weren't Ted Boy. They were this menagerie of weirdos. They were, you know, like they were like Frankenstein Monster, Alibaba, a gorilla, a guy in just a straight up guy in a gorilla suit that they called King Kong. Like these are, and like some of this is like, yeah, these sound like Cardigan guys too. And that you get it because that's where he learned it from. Mm-hmm. But these also aren't people that you can market. Like,
how do you market a gorilla?
Or how do you make it unique? Or some of the reason that these people were popular was because of their difference. Mm-hmm. You know, India, Peru. The Peruvian native guy is interesting to the population of Brazil because he's not the population of Brazil. Mm-hmm. And Ted Boy really wasn't either, obviously. I mean, you could tell he had an accent.
Yeah.
But he was close enough that he was clean in a world of kind of grimy guys, which was how those were all his villains. That was his, you know, Achilles and all of these guys who were set up against him. None of those guys could step in and be the face of Globo the way that Ted Boy could.
There was something familiar to the audience, but also different. So that like allure of difference probably added to his attraction, I guess. And that rise to superstardom on a national level.
He was young and he was handsome and he was on TV, and being young and handsome wasn't something that had been on TV as a marketed thing in the same way. Mm-hmm. And not I don't mean just him, but I mean, there was, what was happening in Brazil was there was sort of a cultural shift behind the, what they call the new guard.
Yes.
So that was music, that was movies, that was the feeling, the beginnings of counterculture in Brazil, where you have to remember there are years, not, you know, within years, you're looking at a military dictatorship. So that is simmering at the same time that this new guard is trying to introduce sort of a younger, more liberalized, more, saying it's like swinging is kind of lesser than what it was. There was something political about it too. Although I do think that Ted Boy definitely swung towards the more swinging side of it being that way. In terms of being a heartthrob, an idol, he wasn't the type of person who's going to mount the barricades and argue against the government compared to, you know, selling shoes.
Yeah. Which, you know, and that's obviously part of the gimmick, is being the sort of young, beautiful man, right? There's all these rumors that you lay out in your article on slamwrestling.com about how, you know, there's rumors about how he's apparently paying his opponents to not, you know, damage his face too much. Later in the article, you know, you talk about how he has a secret wife that obviously that is kept secret to, maybe for safety reasons, because he's so popular that needs like security to walk around with them. But maybe it's also for the gimmick of I want to seem available. It's like sort of that that Joshi situation where it's like you're not allowed to say if you're not allowed to say if you're dating anybody, but you're not allowed to date anybody because the idea is that we want to present you as sort of a available to the fans, I guess, if that makes sense.
That's exactly right. I think you really hit on something that I don't think is, I think it happens a lot. And I think you might be right. For wrestlers, wrestling fans, we can plug into that idea. I'm stepping into a landmine because my knowledge is so limited, but I think this can happen with like K-pop groups.
Sure.
Where, yeah. Oh, all of a sudden somebody is smoking cigarettes and it's just a big deal. Yes. And there's kind of an understanding of fan expectation. Now, it wasn't to that level, but if you're trying to sell young virility, if you're trying to sell the type of, it's weird to say beauty, but I guess you'd say beauty. Mm-hmm. Because that's the other thing. I make him sound like he's this little pipsqueak guy. Like he was lean, but he was jacked. If you watch the movie, they made him Ted Boy. One of the elements I think that makes the case for him as being in the Hall of Fame and showing how popular he was is they made a movie where loosely it's just him, right? He plays a wrestler, you know, what a stretch. But you watch some of the bits, they have bits of him doing workouts and things from in the film. And you can see he's a fit guy. Like he's somebody you can imagine putting on TV and in a slightly repressed society, having a guy who's out there who doesn't also look like a fighter.
Yeah.
I mean, Brazilians know what fighters look like. You know, this is... The Gracies have been doing tournaments for 30 years at this point.
I'm glad he brought up the Gracies and was it Vale Tudo?
Yeah, I'm sure the Gracies are always glad that somebody brings up the Gracies too. No hate against the Gracies. It's just those three triangles are very marketable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's weird. So you have to put Ted Boy in context as well and to figure out why he would be somebody who's worthy of Hall of Fame consideration. Putting him in context matters. And the context is two things, sort of. One of them is the history of wrestling in Brazil.
Yep.
There really wasn't any. There was, in the sense that Stanislaw Tabisco traveled throughout South America in the 30s. And he was much more successful running in Luna Park in Argentina than he was in Brazil. But he ran Rio and Sao Paulo, and pretty much the end of every season kind of fell apart with some dispute. It was either an advertised wrestler wasn't presented. There was a guy, Nowina, that was supposed to be the big guy who was going to be appearing in, I think, 34. And he never showed up at the main, like at the big blow-off show. Mm-hmm. And all of these shows would kind of fall apart. And those were, I don't know to what extent that left a lingering odor on wrestling, but it did the thing where wrestling, you can lie in wrestling. The whole thing is a lie.
What?
Yeah, I know. No. But you can't, you can only do certain kinds of lying.
Yes.
You know, the lying of just putting a guy on a poster.
Yeah.
Me saying that John Cena is going to come to my post show, I put him on the poster, and people show up and he's not there, that's not an acceptable form of lying in wrestling. And they were doing that type of non-acceptable types of lying in wrestling. They were lying as promoters. They were not lying with their actions in between the ring or between the ropes. So you have that combined with the Brazilian fighting culture. As sport, yeah. Sport fighting culture, where the benefits, if you're comparing those two and you want to extol one over the other, well, one's real and the other one's fake. And if you're selling reality and you have real fighters all around you and you know what real fighting looks like, something that's fake fighting better have more than just the replication of real fighting.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of where you start from there, and that's where you see, all right, well, why does this group of colorful goofballs with Ted Boy at the center appeal to this many people? Mm-hmm. And it's something that felt totally different in a way. Like, I think in some senses, even though he wasn't overly goofy, he also like let kind of people be goofy.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of the magazine shoots that he does, he was in a lot of like teeny bop magazines, I guess the equivalent, you know, Teen Beat, Tiger Beat, that stuff.
Yeah.
And in these photo pictorials, they would have him goofing around with his girlfriend or his so you're supposed to think it's his girlfriend. It's just, it's the person he's working with, his coworker from the variety show. Mm-hmm. And she's putting him in a headlock and he's got her up on his shoulder. They're just doing goofy stuff that, there's no secret. I mean, in the Brazilian press in the 30s, there were reports, look, this is all fake. That's one of the things that's torpedoed one of the Zabisco tours, is that one of the main guys in there, his name was, I think his name was something like Peter Brazil. His last name was Brazil, which of course wasn't his real name. That's his working name. And
long time relative of Bobo, I have to imagine.
Sure. Yeah. The long history of famous Brazil. It's crazy. There's the people named Brazil are more successful than Brazilians in pro wrestling, it seems like. Yeah. Oh crud! I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I apologize. Dumb joke to do that.
No. Oh. So he writes out and sends it to work, and he tells the papers essentially. No, they said if I wanted to make money in this tournament, I'd have to go in and lose the first ball, and from there, it was an open secret. It's fake. So how do you make something like that still interesting? And some of it was, it really, it's Ted Boy.
Yeah. Because you have to It seems like part of the identity of Telecatch, at least during the Ted Boy era, we'll say, is presenting it like it is fake, leaning into that idea. You know, we talk about the monsters. We talk about maybe the overindulgence of good versus evil, maybe. And in comparison to what is happening around Telecatch is obviously Valetudo, which is a more MMA fighter shoot style. Where, and it's part of my research, there is a TV show of Valetudo, 1959-1960, that gets canceled in 1960, apparently, after on live television in front of an audience of millions, a fighter snaps his opponent's arm on live television.
Yep.
And it seems almost immediately the television show gets canceled. Volitude sort of becomes an underground fighting sort of, you know, a non-televised popularized thing. And the result, the public shock of the brutality seems to be, well, we want to, or at least maybe also the executive thought is, well, we want fighting this sport idea to still sort of exist on television. However, we don't want it to be unpredictable and extremely brutal. So let's present a sport that we know the outcomes of and that is largely less brutal, something that we know can be safe and still entertain to maybe not just the same audience, but a larger audience, maybe also a younger audience as well.
So, let's talk about wrestling as a product, as a commercial product. And I think what you're talking about is right there. The most recent example that sticks with me is that the Nick Gage pizza cutter on AEW thing.
Yes, sure.
Where the world's worst unintentional product placement.
Yes.
Like, you can't sell products with a guy getting his arm broke.
Yeah.
It's hard. You really can't. I mean, we figured out, Dana White did it for Condom Depot and Venom shorts, but generally you can't sell with a wide appeal products that, yeah. So, and these are, the other thing is the things that were being sold as the primary sponsor of these shows weren't child products. They were, the main one was rum.
Yeah. So, was it Montillo rum?
Yeah, Montilla. Montilla rum. That was the main sponsor of Telecatch. They would call it Telecatch Montilla on Globo. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're even selling kitty cats or whatever. Yeah, you don't sell kitty cats anyway. But you understand what I'm saying. You're not selling to the kitty cat audience with a broken arm.
We're not selling action figures and toys to the kids.
Yeah. So if you and you see that later, Ted Boy picked up major advertisements. He was somebody that they would put in TV ads or in print ads. There's a print ad of him essentially wrestling a pair of leather shoes, stomping on them, twisting them, pouring water on them. And with an ugly cauliflower eared guy with his nose, at a 45 degree angle, mm-hmm. he's not as appealing to look at. So you can understand how do we get from the producer side, how do we get the things, how do we sell the product still? Mm-hmm. Here's something similar. But it's not just that, because the people have to actually be interested in it. And in this case, people were interested in Ted Boy, and they didn't just want to see him wrestle.
Yeah.
They wanted to see him in movies. They wanted to read about him in magazines. He was on the cover of TV, their equivalent of TV Guide, all the time, I think 6 times. And he was cutting records. I mean, these are things that people just wanted more and more and more of him. And it's hard to say that wrestling was certainly not an auxiliary part. It was the predominant reason for his fame.
Yes.
But in the way that, let's say, Sergeant Slaughter, part of his Hall of Fame case mm-hmm. is based in part on things that happened outside the ring, but also in entertainment and television.
Yep.
I think Ted Boy has that, certainly in a greater sense than Sergeant Slaughter. Ted Boy Marino in Brazil is a much bigger star at his peak than Sergeant Slaughter ever was in America. But it shows the thirst for this particular guy.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I guess in terms of another context, we couldn't necessarily find like attendance wrestling data. And, that's the tough part. These are also for television studios. So maybe these are also filmed live in studio audiences, who knows, but it seems like the idea is that, like, at best in terms of a comparison I can make is, like, imagine if in the 80s, Hulk Hogan not only wrestled twice a week, but he had 5 other different television shows that all happened the same time. Like, that feels like, does that feel like an apt comparison to the level of stardom on a national scale that Marino had in Brazil.
Yeah. If you take peak Hulk during Rock and Wrestling and expand that, I think Hulk Hogan might be a better worker than Ted Boy Marino was. And that's just because I've seen more Hulk Hogan than I've seen Ted Boy.
For context, there is like little to no footage of Marino wrestling.
Exactly. Yeah. So some of this I would say I want to tackle, actually, if we could, just the footage point.
Sure.
Head on.
Yeah.
The whole idea that we're this conversation is talking about Ted Boy Marino because he's on the ballot for the first time. And to what extent is there evidence supporting his case to be inducted or to be refused entry into the Hall of Fame? Mm-hmm. And for Ted Boy, one thing that is difficult is the amount of footage that we have, or in the alternative, don't have.
Yeah.
We do not have much publicly available Ted Boy footage. There is reason to believe that there is some that's in private collections. Mm-hmm. There's reason to believe that members of the families of former wrestlers have kept some. This Ted Boy movie seems to indicate that there's going to be more Ted Boy footage out there. But I would say until last month, we didn't have footage of Hackenschmidt.
Yes.
And there was, I don't know how we argue that Hackenschmidt isn't a Hall of Famer, despite the fact we never had any video of him, any film of him to watch. Now, seeing that film, I don't think that changes my opinion on George Hackenschmidt. I think it's fascinating, but I don't think that it all of a sudden puts him over the line into a different category, or that the quality of his work was so poor that he should be removed from the Hall of Fame either. I think it's become something where enough information is available beyond his footage that people were able to make a call. And it may be that we get more footage. And like Hackenschmidt, I don't think that additional footage of Ted Boy, now that we can see some of what he can do in the ring through the movie, through you'll get little tiny clips that seem to be from old news programs that have been recorded and recycled.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think we're going to see something from Ted Boy where he's going to go. I mean, maybe he could. Maybe all of a sudden he busts out a bunch of French catch, or he, you know, has a Canadian destroyer for the first time ever. But I don't think that's going to happen. But I don't think that his case is based primarily on ring work. He's not Ishii, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you never know of a Canadian destroyer. You know, Telecatch has that sort of loose lucha libre thing. You never know. Maybe
it's entirely possible. Yeah, there was no. I mean, again, there was no. You had to be wedded to physics, but not the reality thereof.
Yeah,
they were open to do. You want to throw five head scissors in a row? Let's do it, buddy.
Instead of a Canadian destroyer, it's of course a Brazilian destroyer, as we'll come to find out one day.
We could call it the word for people from Rio is a carioca. Oh, we could have a carioca destroyer.
There we go. That movie, Dos na La Lona, it's basically Two on Canvas. I'll have that link in the description, along with, I guess if you want to see the match itself, there's a match clips, I guess, taken out of that movie, which I'll have in the description as well. Yeah, it's very little, but what you see in it, obviously, is somebody of small frame. I think I saw in an interview, Ted Boy said that he weighed roughly 70 kilograms, about what, 154 is what I had. So a very guy, small frame, I think really good baby face selling. And his signature move is basically spamming flying head scissors over and over again. You know, the clips you see are him hitting the move 5, 6, 7 times in a row, typically ending it with a drop kick of some sort. And that was his go-to move, but he was always a guy that I'm going to guess worked underneath against these big, bad, you know, burly men, getting destroyed, worked babyface underneath, and then just all of a sudden had the agility at the wazoo, based on what we can see.
Yeah, that's, I think the agility when you think about other guys who are around that time, you think about a guy like, you know, Antonino Rocca. Mm-hmm. And with your the high spot is he slapped the guy in the face with his bare feet. And that's still, you just laughed. That's still funny. Even me describing that to you is still got a pop.
Yeah.
That popped you right there. The idea has been dead for a half a century. And that still popped you. That same thing with Ted Boy. Mm-hmm. He was giving a lot of it. You're totally right. You get beaten up. They get the heat on you. They do all sorts of heinous stuff. They used to do, I love they used to use fruit. They still do, actually. Fruit mm-hmm. as a weapon in Brazil is a traditional weapon as much as a kendo stick in Philadelphia. So they would cut up lemons, like squeeze the juice into his eyes. And some of that, to me, is fascinating because you can't work that.
Yeah.
You can't work fruit. You know, you can't, I don't know how you do it. So you're squeezing actual juice in this guy's eyes. Mm-hmm. And then you really have to feel, you know, it gives you a reality amidst all of this goofiness. There's a real moment of reality or something like that. And then, of course, Ted Boy comes back with flying head scissors from every direction. Sometimes, like what you would imagine as the modern kind of like a Rana style of front Hurricane Rana. Sometimes that like Edouard Carpentier where you come from the side and hold it there for a second and go over. So like he did have different types of head scissor maneuvers.
Yeah.
It's the everything else. But yeah, it was flying stuff because it was just, you know, big moves to pop the crowd. And at that time, when the other guy's move is to just rub your face in the turnbuckle mm-hmm. and he, you know, he's built like a Neanderthal or he has the build of a fire hydrant, you know, doing those types of moves when they're all ground based looks cool.
And like we said, he's done a lot of outside stuff as well during his peak of popularity. He's on a bunch of different TV shows. He's on Telecatch. He has a movie, Dos na Leona. Lona, two on canvas, or whatever. That's the translation I have. There's a poll by the magazine Revista Intervallo to determine the country's favorite actor. He ranks third in that poll. He's on these sticker books. He's on these magazines where he's up there with, maybe not up there fully, but as a second to Pele, obviously all-time legend Brazilian soccer star. He puts out a record with two songs on it. I saw an interview with him where he said that record ranked, quote, third or fourth on Radio Globo. So it was, you know, apparently popular.
Well, okay. I have seen that too. I'm not sure I would take that as a sign of popularity so much as the fact that Globo was a multimedia conglomerate.
Yep.
And they were spinning their star's record just as much. But the fact that it was made, I mean, yeah. You think about that, there is the popularity for it. They made a record, and how many other wrestlers are doing that? You know, you think of Terry Funk in Japan, those types of things, you know, Coco Ware, Pile Driver, that type of stuff. Yeah. You have to be at a pretty big level of popularity for someone at that time to take the capital to invest in you singing, you, Ted Boy, who is from Italy, who was raised in Argentina with a terrible accent that nobody can understand what you're saying. They're going to put you in a studio with the cans on your ears, and they're going to have you record two songs, press it on the vinyl, and sell it. Mm-hmm. You have to be big. In wrestling terms, you have to be Terry Funk in Japan big. You have to be, King Lawler in Memphis, big. Yeah. You have to be big. But we're not talking about Jerry Lawler in Memphis. We're talking about a country, a gigantic country, not just a town.
I do have the two songs that he performed here ready.
Great.
By the way, folks. Per request, one of the stipulations to come on the show is please play his music. I got it ready, queued up.
I'll pull back. Yeah, we're pulling back the curtain. One of the conditions I had as I agreed to this interview is that we had to play at least a little bit of the music, because the number one, it's kind of silly, but also, so this is part of what his case is. Like, we don't have promos. We don't have.
That's a good point.
So you want to hear him? Here we go. Here he is, just going to a beat.
Yes. So I have the two songs that they are Rapaz Moderno, which I believe was the Modern Boy, I think is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gosto Mito de Voque, something of the voice, I'm going to guess there.
Do the first one, because you get the kids singing.
Okay, sure. Okay, well, here we go. Rapaz Moderno by Ted Boy Marino. This is what, 1967, I believe. Yes. So here is Rapaz Moderno.
Un rapa moderno son.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Very good. It's simple, light music. They called it Yeah 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 music.
Yeah.
Because the idea was that you would hear just jangly 60s music. Not political, not emotional, really. Just very goofy singing. And it really was, we want more of this guy. And it was another way to get him that way.
And like you said, if Radio Globo is, this big conglomeration, at least this is some sort of advertising, move to advertise Marino even more. You have a song. This is also the title track, if you'll say it, the title track off his record. So it's him singing a light, fun song accompanied with children. Like this advertising idea of who is Ted Boy Marino, a fun-loving dude singing songs with children, right? I mean, I think that's the gimmick, right?
And it's not bad. I don't know if the music is good, but it's not bad. The Crusher has put out a record, and his singing is obviously bad, and it's part of the joke. But here, it's not bad.
No, I mean, to
again,
my
it's
knowledge,
not good, but it's
to my
not
knowledge
bad.
Of 1967 Brazilian music, it feels fine. The instrumentation at the very least is fun to listen to.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it does. Obviously he says third or fourth ranked on Radio Globo, but
he didn't cut another one.
He didn't cut another one. That's
so you can take that. His singing career didn't take off.
No, but his acting career obviously did. I have here. This is an article I found titled Telenovelas in Brazil, From Traveling Scripts to a Genre and Proto Format, Both National and Transnational. It listed a bunch of the most popular television shows for basically the 60s in Rio de Janeiro. And according to that article that I found, or I guess it wasn't really an article, but it was really a academic article, Telecatch was the most popular TV program in Rio de Janeiro in 1967. Of all television programs, 1967, apparently, Telecatch is the most popular, which, again, speaking to his stardom, he's got movies, he's got music, he's part of the most popular TV show in wrestling, in Telecatch. So much so that, I don't know if it was, I assume it was before this, that Telecatch is what it is called. The television program was called Telecatch, but professional wrestling still to today in Brazil is called telecatch, of course, being television and catch as catch can, that sort of portmanteau. So when we're saying this sort of like, you know, the comparisons of Hulk Hogan and all these, you know, top draw guys, it's a very short window. You know, he comes in Brazil and what is this, 1965, and 2 years later, he is everywhere. He is seemingly what appears to be unescapable, Ted Boy Marino, and he is pushed to the high heavens, and not only unescapable, but welcomed by the Brazilian people, it seems like.
Yeah, so there's the other way of thinking about that. We have to think about when we say that he's pushed, he is pushed, but there is there's also the same evidence that the appetite is there. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier the idea of him having trouble in the streets. And part of that was just the literally, he was famous the way that the most famous people are famous, in that they can't go outside without bodyguards. They can't go outside without a disguise on. That's the level of famous he was. And unlike Andre the Giant, or unlike Hulk Hogan, or Goldberg, or these other kind of big physical stars, he's a 155-pound guy.
Yeah.
He's not somebody that just turns heads, even if they were had nothing to do with it. It's specifically because it's him. He's not the way that certain wrestlers, they just look famous.
Yeah.
Undeniably, The Rock just looks, you know, he doesn't look like other people look. I don't know how, is that the most polite way you could say that? He doesn't look the way other people look.
I worked on Titan Games. Do you remember that TV show? It was like a reality competition show hosted by The Rock. And I worked on that show. And walking by The Rock is just like there is an aura, a presence that comes off that's like, oh, okay, I can't be here. You know what I mean? Like, I can't be near this guy right now.
Yeah. And when you think about that, before he was The Rock, if he was, you know, Joe from, Accounts Receivable, he would still have that element of like, what's the deal with Joe?
Yeah.
Like, why is he just that way?
Yeah. Ted Boy's people are magnetized to him.
Yeah. But you could put him in, he literally, based on his stature, you know what, this is probably, I wish I'd thought of this like a minute ago, a much more elegant way of saying it. Somebody like Hulk Hogan is impossible to get lost in a crowd.
Sure, yes.
Ted Boy Marino could, if it weren't for the fact that everyone in the crowd doesn't want the focus to be on anyone except for him.
Yes.
And that's a different type of a draw that's hard to... I don't know that we have that now. I don't know that somebody... as that big... Maybe Brian Danielson?
Yeah.
Yeah, but even then, Danielson's bigger. Danielson's got, you know, 20 more pounds worth of muscle on him than Ted Boy did.
And I don't know, probably similar heights. We don't think we have a height registered for Marino, but probably that too.
It feels like when Fujinami sort of like broke out as a big lightweight star, but it didn't feel like it could happen.
Yeah.
But there wasn't any of that prior baggage.
Yeah. I was trying to think of, like, I don't know. I was trying to think of like if someone the size of like Darby Allin, you know, this
that's actually
small
really
guy was constantly like on a popularity level seemingly to The Rock today. If the guy can't walk around without a security detail,
that's good. I would co-sign that.
Yeah, he is a massive star in Brazil. The sad part of all of this is how Brazilian telecatch wrestling changes massively, right? You have you have this new guard, you have the government doing all these things, and I believe this is a new governmental Brazilian regime that has taken over.
Yeah, so there was a military government which took over in Brazil. And part of what they were doing as a matter of social control, I'm trying to be careful just because I'm not trying to be deferential to the military dictatorship. I just don't want to overstep and go farther than we need to.
Sure.
But as a way of keeping social control, one of the things that they did was were passing laws on what could be presented on television. Mm-hmm. And that became a law about combat sports, which wrestling, telecatch in Brazil, and vale tudo, these other things, which really weren't represented in the same way, it was mostly about telecatch, were restricted from being shown on air until late in the evenings.
Yes.
And you correctly hit on the previous incident of a serious injury during a combat sport, but there were also later things, you know, you'd get, people would get hard way blood. This, again, we're talking about, when, even though we're talking about kind of the Frankenstein monster, King Kong, Alibaba type guys, they were not going FMW type, yes, of monsters where they were, you know, bringing chainsaws to the ring. No one was going through tables.
Yeah.
But still, you know, somebody can get a bloody nose when you're wrestling as best, no matter how hard you're trying. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, some of those things were then used against wrestling during the broadcast, or during, I guess the idea was broadcast when kids would be watching.
Yeah.
So it got restricted to late in the evening, which then completely affected the sponsorship. A lot of these shows were commercial-based with a single sponsor, and those sponsors were saying, look, we're not getting the same value for money for a show that's being, you know, put on at 11 o'clock at night. Well, this used to be on in prime time, on weekends, and you had a lot of people who were home. TV was still, like, cool. It wasn't seen as a lame thing to stay home and watch TV. Mm-hmm. So
I imagine it's still new, right? I mean, I don't know how many homes had television in the 1960s Brazil.
Yeah, you were having people, like, if you had a TV, you were well off, mm-hmm, and having a TV was a thing. Like, if somebody in the neighborhood had a TV, it wouldn't be weird for you to just to go to their house and watch TV if something, yeah, major was happening. The ideas of looking at TVs in the shop window is something that I think is, like, I've seen photos of that from, it seems like, around the world. That is, yeah, something that's our weird universal experience. Like, so many of us could be united by the fact that our ancestors were too poor to own a TV. So that idea of having that level of television exposure, and you take that and all of a sudden you thrust it into the middle of the night, mm-hmm, not the middle of the night, but, you know, these are TV stations that shut off broadcasting.
Yeah.
At a certain point, this is still the era where TVs are not broadcasting 24 hours. So you're saying, look, who's even up watching? There was no late night culture of watching TV. So having people doing that was not as profitable in the eyes of rum and the other, and honestly, the other rum. So that's where you end up seeing a telecatch slip off TV, because people don't want to, they can't sponsor it. They can't, it's not that it became less popular, but also you can imagine if you're living in a strict government, and the government says, hey, this is generally unfit, do you want to be seen as a public and proud consumer of that same thing? Maybe you do, but you're probably more likely to feel that way in a more liberal situation than you are a repressive one. And so I think the government indirectly taking a stand against wrestling, mm-hmm, has a effect that really isn't spelled out in the law, or isn't necessarily spelled out, but you can infer, in the same way that when we don't have attendance records,
yeah,
for a lot of Ted Boy's shows, you can ask yourself, well, do you think the most popular TV show in the country could consistently draw a house? Probably So while you can't look at something and say this is Londis and Greece that's setting incredible numbers, you also can't imagine a scenario where one thing is happening and the other isn't.
Yeah.
Where somebody's that popular but isn't a draw. So yeah. it's easy for me to imagine people who said, well, look, this is, you know, this is off. Let's just deal with the bigger fact that our lives are very different than they were before. So you can see that happening too. I don't know if this some people use wrestling for an escape. A lot of people watch wrestling for an escape, and then here you are in this regime and they take your telecatch away.
Yeah.
Brutal. That's Spanish, but I love Hugo Savinovich.
I'm going to put a pin real quick in discussing the law change, because I believe I have it in front of me here. But the idea of the lack of attendance records, but using the television as a draw, is like a weird thing that is like kind of happening in terms of the modern US and candidate conversation of, you know, look at someone, I don't know what would be a good example, but someone that, like, you know, in a time where WWE is having these massive ratings and massive profits and stuff, but then you have these comparison, you know, Roman Reigns as an example, right? Mm-hmm. During the SmackDown on Fox, Peacock deals and all these sort of things, WWE is making massive money hand over fist. They have a lot of viewers in television, but there's arguments against Roman Reigns at the time. Now he's in the Hall of Fame, so it doesn't matter. But this idea of like, oh, well, the attendance isn't there. He's not necessarily an attendance mover. And you're having this sort of push and pull now in a modern sense of, you know, is a Hall of Fame level draw someone that, you know, you can only look at the tangible attendance numbers. How do we judge television ratings and measure, you know, all these metrics that Brendan Thurston puts together on WrestleNomics? Like, how do you judge these things in comparison? And here you have a guy like Ted Boy, who we have no attendance records, but we can very much see that he is a massive television draw. And his thing is basically his drawing case is solely based off of how popular of a television show he had, or at least that he was on.
Yeah, I think. Well, I think it exemplifies the type of star that he was. Mm-hmm. I think it exemplifies how deep it got, and how broad it was, and how and that's the other thing. It's not just that he was a popular wrestler; he was a popular just entertainer figure.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, I don't know. So this is as a Hall of Fame discussion. I mean, the reason we're having this conversation is to talk about whether or not Dave Meltzer's Hall of Fame deserves to have Ted Boy Marino in it or not.
Correct.
And a lot of, I think there's, when I think about the Hall of Fame, the Dave Meltzer's Hall of Fame, I have to think about it in two ways. There's the year, obviously, where the Hall of Fame starts is 1996. Mm-hmm. In 1996, he puts in 120 some odd people into the Hall of Fame. Now, there are people whose careers, then I think about pre and post 1996 people. Now, people who are post 1996, well, there are people who are in now who were children in 1996.
Yes,
that's natural. We should expect that group of people, the post 1996 people going forward, should yield way more Hall of Famers because they have opportunities to build their careers. Now, people who are 1996 and earlier, like Ted Boy, how do they even get involved in this? Well, again, it's Dave's Hall of Fame. So nothing number one is that Dave has to know about you in 1996.
Yes.
If Dave doesn't know enough about you in 1996, then you weren't going into that first class, whether you deserved it or not. And there are people like Paul Pons, Karloff Lagarde. I think of Karloff especially in the work Fredo did. That is a guy who obviously should have been in the first class, but just was off Dave's radar. And
Well, there's like the modern, who's the new person, Bobby Davis, that like even Dave is like, he should have been in the 96 class immediately.
Right. So Bobby Davis is Bobby Davis is the other kind of guy who gets admitted now. The guys that Dave forgot.
Mm-hmm.
So, so then Dave admits it and Dave says, look, he's a guy I forgot. Ted Boyd isn't in the I forgot category. I know that Dave didn't know anything about Ted Boyd until recently. I feel weird saying it, but like I'm fairly confident that my research and a lot of the stuff that's come up recently is the only reason that Ted Boyd Marino is on the ballot this year.
Yeah.
So at worst, Dave had never considered Ted Boyd. And so he's in the Karloff Lagarde category, as opposed to a Dick Murdoch or somebody who he'd considered and thought of as not worthy. Mm-hmm. That means that with Ted Boyd, he's, and I think there are people like this. I think there are probably more post-1996 people to be admitted, but there are still these pre-96 wrestlers that deserve induction. And there are certain people that over time they get recognized. And there are people like Johnny Rougeau that we know of and we gradually build on. And someone, you know, a particular individual that has Dave's attention pushes that to a certain point. And then eventually that trickles up and you get Johnny Rougeau in the Hall of Fame. And so then I think about, well, does Ted Boyd is probably closer to that area. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, by saying that we picked 100, we, David, picked 120 something people, I should be clear. I don't vote on the Hall of Fame. I'm not a voter. Mm-hmm. So I'm just talking, you know, but it's
you're in the weeds and the trenches doing the research.
True. Yeah. So what I'm saying is like, if you're in that group of 120 people early, mm-hmm. We didn't go, oh, I forgot Anoki, you know, like everyone who's big is in there.
Yeah.
So now who we're sussing through are either people like Ted Boyd, where there's obvious things like a major language barrier. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I think that people who are working in Mexico, there are more people who are speaking English and Spanish that are able to help bridge the gap than there are speaking English and Portuguese who are able to bridge the gap for somebody like Ted Boyd. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of it's that, but then I also think that when we're looking at these guys, we're looking at Ted Boyd is not a guy where we know everything and we just need to figure out how we're going to value it.
Yeah.
You know, Sputnik Monroe remains on the ballot and he gets the support that he gets. And I think it very much depends on how much you think what he did matters and is Hall of Fame worthy. And I think that I can understand an argument of somebody who says, you know what? No, Sputnik Monroe doesn't go in the Hall of Fame next to Luthes.
Yeah.
They don't go there. They're not equals. But Ted Boyd, it seemed like this historical candidate that we just ignored. And not on purpose. You know, there are guys like Phil Lyons who are digging through Hungarian newspapers, who are finding these guys who, you know what, I don't know if they're Hall of Fame worthy. Mm-hmm. But I do know that it's, for me, it's more interesting to find these guys who we in predominantly America just don't know about, never engaged with. And that to me is like, is somebody like a Paul Pons when he was being debated? Is he more valuable? I would rather talk about him, even though I can't watch him, than talk about the Hart Foundation. And whether or not the Hart Foundation deserves induction when Brett's in there already, or the number of time people are talking about Tully and Arn and JJ as a unit and how long did that last and all of this, like some of that, you know what, I'm more interested because it's all the same. We've already seen it. And it's really just a question of, well, are we tuning the knobs exactly to where we want? And those kind of are people you get in, you get out. There's not a slam. But some of these guys, I think for me, Ted Boy is a, he should be in the hall of a professional wrestling hall of fame that includes some of the people that are included in Dave's Hall of Fame, not because these are lesser stars.
Yeah.
But if Shima is in, who I like,
mm-hmm.
if Shima is in, I don't understand the argument for Ted Boy not being in.
Yeah.
No,
I completely understand what you're talking about. I think, you talk about like the lack of knowledge surrounding this. And that's the biggest factor, obviously, is if Dave doesn't really know much about Ted Boy and doesn't really consider him until you write an article about Ted Boy, you know, what does that say about the voting body, right? How much of the voting body? And that's literally the purpose of like what this show is.
Yeah. It's,
obviously, you're going to have first-time candidates like Mercedes Moné and Drew McIntyre that everyone has seen their entire career. And we'll have the discussion about them, but there isn't going to be, there isn't much like discovery in that process per se. Maybe you can find a little fun tidbit that's like, oh yeah, Drew McIntyre was a massive draw. I don't think I'll find that, but you know, you don't have that. Whereas here, you know, and especially with like, I think you'll get a little bit less so, but still with the other three guys, all the British wrestlers that popping up in the rest of the world this year, you'll still get some of that of, there are still people that like don't know about this. And with Ted Boy, it is not only you have to explain who he is, you have to explain Brazilian wrestling, the culture of the time, what happened to Brazilian television, how it evolved and changed, and why is, you know, let, you know, well, we can skip right, I guess kind of falls into historical significance in some way, but why is it that you have massive television show, massive star in the 60s and 70s, and Brazilian wrestling, it's almost like it's still around, but seemingly a shell of its former self and isn't really discussed or anything. And Brazilian wrestling is sort of a place to have fake tournaments, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Well, right, every tournament, if you want a phantom belt change, put it in Rio.
Yeah, like what? Why is it that like, you know, you have to explain all of this when you're talking about Ted Boy, is that like this is all part of his case, is that like he is the Brazilian wrestler. And if you're mm-hmm. looking at the Hall of Fame as a world level, you know, Hall of Fame, it feels like you got to pick up the guy in Brazil who was the number one star of Brazil and probably to this day the number one wrestler out of Brazil. That is weird. It's simply unknown, not only to us, but as far as I can tell, to a modern Brazilian person.
The worst you can do with Ted Boy is set a floor for how big he is. And to me, that floor is so high when you think about the types of evidence that we have that we certainly don't have for a lot of other people who have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I know that there's people who are going to, you're going to look at Ishii and you're going to say, you know what, in terms of work rate, he's an A+.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But is he comparatively so much, and this is, again, I like watching Tomohiro Ishii matches, but is his ability as a worker so great compared to those around him that it put him on a national level, you know, like he wasn't, Ishii didn't become Ricky Dozan on network television because of his work rate. And you have to say, all right, well, these have set the criteria. It's a Hall of Fame is an organic thing. People who have done anything to change their candidacy will get admitted years later. Some of that has to do with like that weird lucha log jam where like nobody in Mexico was getting voted in and now people finally are. Yep. But some of that is, you can understand where that comes from. But some of it, it's just, we have weird things where like, I know Dave reports the votes in terms of group. And so modern, you know, the historians, the historical wrestlers, the modern wrestlers, whatever. Yes. And it'll be like, Randy Orton came in second with the old time wrestlers and everybody else hates him. I'm like, I don't know who is in that group. I don't know how that happens. I don't
how
know
big
why
that group really. Is. You know?
Yeah. So who are these people who are voting? I also don't know. And I think that some of them, I know that some of these voters are people who are invested in this idea of we just want to have this thing as a historical thing that lives. It's not just the Dave Meltzer Hall of Fame, but hey, it may not be perfect, but it's the best thing we got as a way of exemplifying these are the important things about wrestling as told through the lives of certain individuals. And here are the, you know, here is the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
Here are the top of the class. And when you're doing that, I think it's weird, but you have to say like, all right, to what extent does this matter that I, you know, how much do I love Paul Orndorff? And how much has what happened between last year and this year? Well, it's not him, it's us.
Yeah.
So then I think that Ted Boy, a case like Ted Boy, has not so much to do with him. There's only so much about his career's over. He's dead. You know, he's not putting the boots on again. He didn't he hung out on the beach and ate shrimp. And like, he loved the end of his life. It was awesome. The beach he lived on was beautiful. Lemmy Beach. And he, so, you know, there's nothing's going to change about him.
Yeah.
It's going to be a question about us. And it's going to be a question is, are there enough voters who are willing to trust what they see without having to see what necessarily what they want?
Yes. Which is a very tough hurdle for a lot of voters to cross.
Because what you want to do, and we see this, and we all go through phases like this, and hopefully we grow out of them. But when we talk about things like wrestling, you can see people slip into this thing where they want to proclaim. They want to say something's the best whatever, or this is the all-time whatever, or these. And part of that is because there's power in being the proclaimer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just throw stuff out there, and maybe it's right, maybe it's not. And if it is right, well, awesome. Then you can point to the fact that you were right. And if you don't, nobody cares. You know, this isn't unique to wrestling or wrestling criticism or fandom. So, you're going to have people who are willing to say, I can look at all of these pieces of evidence. You know, it's like, this is a weird way to think about it, but in some ways, if you think about a murder trial.
Okay.
Bear with me.
I'm with you.
If you think about a murder trial, the best witness never testifies. The person who was killed never testifies. So you never hear your best version of the story. But people are still, you know, tried and convicted for murder because you go on other evidence. Here, we may not have what we want as the best evidence, but is there sufficient information enough to build the case for us to say whether or not Ted Boy goes in or not? Well, I don't know, but Dave decided that this was the year that we were going to have to ask ourselves that question. You notice how quickly I just join an make myself part of these groups. We're gonna have to vote. Yes. I'm not voting. Maybe I am. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've gave Dave Meltzer money, so I don't know. Like maybe I'm not on the radar. But point is, like a lot of it is it just depends on us and who is gonna decide the vote, and to what extent podcasts like this get through to anybody. Yeah. I have no idea. I know that because of what I've been doing with Ted Boy, and not because of me, it's because I just happened to be the one who uncovered this guy.
Yep.
And is one, and that people, a bunch of people knew about. This is a guy hiding in plain sight.
The cold case of Ted.
So having this spread out, doing research on it, finding this information, gathering it, putting it into a digestible format. Having somebody like Greg Oliver at Slam Wrestling, who has reached out to me when I've done other podcasts and said I don't promote him enough, it's very clear. Slam Wrestling is a tremendous website, and without it, I don't know that this happens. I don't, because that's the thing. You have to have somebody like Greg who's interested in taking the time to then edit an article like that, and then to publish it and to have enough reach to say, here's something that's worth sharing. And then we get to this point of, does, are those people going to read that type of information?
Yep.
And to what extent are we voting on the Hall of Fame because of stuff like that? Because of Verb's cold analytical case based on magazine covers and TV ratings,
sticker books,
and sticker books, and all of these things, you know, the rags, papers, and pins that go, that help build it up. Is that something that the voters care about, or is it just kind of vibes? And a lot of that goes to, like, all right, well, I know certain, I like, look, I know Greg Oliver thinks that the career of Ted Boy Marino is worth talking about because he chooses to publish an article on it. I know Brian Solomon thinks that the career of Ted Boy Marino is worth sharing because he records a podcast. I know the same thing about you. And those things, when I'm like, I look at that, I'm like, all right, well, I don't know who these people are. I'm done what I can to share this information. Yeah. I was pursuing Ted Boy to get a nomination because I think it makes sense based on his career.
Yeah.
But just like all of these people, like, there are going to be people who are not going to get in. Bobby Davis wasn't in the Hall of Fame until this year.
Yep.
And like, you can look at the, like, when he made, when Dave made the list, when he had 120 people or whatever, and he didn't put Chigusa Nagayo in the first class.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain groups of certain people. I'm like, all right, well, I don't know. This is like, this isn't like an objective thing where we find, you know, you're, we figure it out. We just, we fumble around and hopefully we get some things right, but there's no right. It's a question of, you know, a lot of it is like, does this guy in the Bay Area, California, how invested is he in this, or did something happen to him? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. How much can we raise awareness for these people? That's the big question.
Yeah.
And then how much can we spread that awareness to at least 60% of a number of people from vast different ends of the world? Don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? Well, it could all be rigged. Who knows?
Well, we talked a lot about this. I feel like we're nearing the end of this podcast. Is there any other tiny little bits of Ted Boy's career that you want to mention before we go? Obviously, we sort of left off where, you know, the Brazilian government ends it, you know, not really ends it, but moves the time slots around. 12, you know, what is it? TV program suitable for 12 plus should be aired after 8 p.m. So they just start moving things around, and Telecatch gets moved to like 11 p.m. And then eventually it kind of gets canceled, but he's obviously still working until the 70s and 80s. He's also still like doing entertainment and acting till I think 2000 something. 2002, I want to say it was 2000 exactly. And then his last recorded match, 8,000 people, February of 1992. Is that's a super fast thing, but any other small bits of details that you want to talk about in that sort of area?
No, I mean, he was a classic pro wrestler in that when it got pulled from TV, he promised he was going to retire. And then, of course, immediately came out of retirement, came off the farm, and he was doing live shows.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He was able to sustain himself and, you know, build a beautiful apartment, not built, but has a beautiful apartment, built a beautiful life, had living in beachside in Rio with, you know, kids in advanced education. And all of this built off of his ability to perform for people. And so, yeah, he would be drawing thousands of people at these areas out that were different than Rio and Sao Paulo, the major areas. So he would go down south, or he would go into the interior. These were places that you could get the TV maybe, but you weren't getting the shows. The shows were mostly were running weekly in Rio and Sao Paulo. So after that, he started going out and doing live shows. It's like a touring act, like house shows, I guess, what you'd say.
Sure.
Whatever it is. The thing that wrestling used to be before TV. whatever that is. Yeah. And then, yeah, he would be on, he would be still kind of a cultural icon, the way you could put him in a variety show. Uh-huh. And people would immediately recognize that this character was Ted Boy Marino.
Yes.
So then if there was a joke about the fact that it was, you know, something Italian, or if there was a joke, something wrestling or whatever, that would then help get over because he was a known character.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he stayed in entertainment. And it's, you know, wrestling has tried, wrestling's back on broadcast television in Brazil. Mm-hmm. It's been a while. And Ted Boy was still part of wrestling. In there were legacy guys. There were, you know, Ted Boy Jr., the sobrino de Ted Boy, little, you know, the nephew of Ted Boy. So there was stuff like that in the same way that you can think of, let's say, you know, Mexican Lucha, where, you know, Blue Damon Jr. There was that, but it just, you know, there was legacy, but they weren't, nothing burned as hot.
Yeah.
During Ted Boy, during the mid to late 60s. Nothing ever got close to that.
It was the guy that was over.
It was the guy. It was wrestling was over, but it was certainly the guy. You know, people liked his opposition as foils. Mm-hmm. But nothing ever reached the popularity that he had. And you know, like UFC is popular now, I would say, in this, in the way that it's carried over. While wrestling, they can go, you know, WWE will go and do Brazilian shows periodically. Mm-hmm. Oh,
UFC,
my God.
UFC obviously also does Brazilian shows.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying comparatively, UFC runs way more shows in Brazil. It's way more part of the culture. WWE is there, but it's, and there are still local shows. There's still indie wrestling.
Yeah.
But nothing like what it was. Nothing close.
Yeah, there's still wrestlers that have, you know, popped out of Brazil. You know, Ty Conti, Cesar Bononi, I think is what it is. Arturo Ruas. So, like, there's wrestlers that have popped out. Not really massive stars by any means of imagination.
I mean, you didn't mention the giant Silva.
Yeah, yes.
Who is probably the most, who probably has made the most money in wrestling compared to any of the people that you just named.
Yes.
But you're totally right. There's no, the most conversation Brazil gets in modern wrestling, or did for a while, was the Phantom Tournaments or, you know, the Sheik's opponent, Bobo.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I think that's everything on Ted Boy Marino. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Typically, what I end this with is I'll send you the rest of the world category and say, of this group, who do you like? Who would you, if you had a ballot, who would you would vote for? I am slightly scared because it feels like the rest of the world conversation slightly broke you.
So if I had to pick Ted Boy, obviously
I'm sending Anko it in,
goes
the,
in as well,
sending in the private chat right now.
Oh, here we go. Here. All right. Yeah. So, I think Gordienko, I think, Jose Terrace.
Yep.
And Marino would probably be who I'd pick, but I also think, I don't know. There are certain things of like, I don't know. Like a guy like Adrian Street, to what extent are you going to talk about influence?
Yep.
And to what extent is, I would be open to hearing arguments about any of these guys, really. Honestly, you know what I wish we did more of is I wish we'd made the cases against guys. Everybody makes the cases for the guys that they like. Sure. I think that there's a, you know, someone, I'd love to hear somebody make the case against Ted Boy, or make the case against, be like, Dom DiNucci, here's why he shouldn't.
Well, if you want to start up an anti the ballot show, I think I'll be interested.
Just go through all these guys who don't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Like Lars Anderson, this guy.
A super negative show might do well.
Wrestling in a negative environment. I don't know. I just feel like I don't want to break new ground.
Yeah, I think I very much appreciate you coming onto the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a great conversation. Of course, that article that you wrote, Ted Boy Marino was Brazil's king of telecatch. Slamwrestling.net, I think I said .com earlier, but slamwrestling.net is the website. The article is Ted Boy Marino was Brazil's king of telecatch. And the writer, of course, Verb Abrams. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about Ted Boy Marino with me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being the Ted Boy guy and sharing some Ted Boy information with everybody.
Exactly. And yeah, we'll be back with another episode talking about another new candidate for the Hall of Fame ballot next time on The Ballot. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
Ring Post Radio is the only show hosted by Ryan Knightsey and Scotty Edwards that talks about the entire world of professional wrestling. With new episodes coming out every Sunday, there is absolutely no reason to not listen to real, honest wrestling opinions from two crazy maniacs. Have a hot boy summer and listen along to Ring Post Radio every Sunday on the Countout Network.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
15% off everything you can fit inside the bag is back at Menards. Make painting easier by using a one-coat product. Grand Distinction is an interior paint and primer in one that will give your home a fresh, updated look. Right now, get 15% off Pittsburgh products and all the painting supplies you can fit inside the bag through January 12th. See store for complete details. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.